from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Talk show host Dick Cavett is being honored this week at a San Francisco Sketchfest tribute marking 50 years since the Dick Cavett Show debuted on ABC. We'll talk to him about his life and career in the first half hour. Then at 10:30, U.S. District Court Judge William Alsup last night blocked the Trump administration's decision to wind down the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, and we'll get the latest on the fate of the DACA program. It's coming up next. Stay with us. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Talk show host Dick Cavett is being honored on Friday at a SF Sketchfest tribute marking 50 years since the Dick Cavett Show debuted on ABC. And while best known for his talk shows, Dick Cavett also authored four books and appeared in a dozen films, including Beetlejuice and Forrest Gump. He got a start as a writer for talk show host Jack Parr and then soon began sitting in for fellow Nebraskan Johnny Carson on The Tonight Show. He joins us now to discuss his life and career, and we're taking your questions for Dick Cavett. You can call us now at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786, or email us forum at kqed.org. And welcome, Dick Cavett.
Well, the same to you. Nice to see you or hear you.
Both on this count. Congratulations first on your award. Warm congratulations to you. Much deserved. 50 years and a sobering number. But could I just say something to you first about a debt I feel to you? People often ask me where my interviewing, it's mediocre at best, but, you know, where my interviewing so-called skills come from. And I always mention your name first of all. And the reason for that is you showed me that running a talk show can be done with intellect, with literacy, and with depth. And I thank you very deeply for that.
Well, you're, I've never known what more than welcome means, but that's what you are.
Well, you are indeed welcome.
I wouldn't want to think I only did shows with depth.
We did some lighter ones, too, and we can talk about those in the course of this hour. I hope we do.
Yes, I had many comedians, many jackasses in various fields like politics. And I like that. I like a great variety of stuff rather than, I don't know, I don't think I'd like to sit and read stock market returns into the microphone every day.
Well, we share the preference for a lot of variety, too. But you also have three Emmys. Yeah. You were a magician. You were a gymnast. In fact, you were an award-winning gymnast. There's a lot in your career and a lot under your belt through the years that you were in the public eye. You also did stand-up and wrote jokes. I mean, it's an extraordinary career, if I may say so. And I want to talk with you about
it. Thank you for including gymnast. If I'd written it for you, I would have said state champion gymnast, but that's on the pommel horse. But I don't want to bog you down with a lot of detail.
Can we also mention that you were in, well, we mentioned earlier you were in a number of movies, but I don't know that our listeners know that you were Freddy Krueger at one point in Elm Street, number 3, I think it was.
I suppose technically you could say I was. In fact, I never got to actually be him in the sense that my scene ended with a sort of lightning flash of some sort. And then those who finally saw the movie saw Freddy instead of me. But I was with Zsa Zsa Gabor and chatting with her when the interruption happened. And there was a clip from it, and when I was on with Johnny one night, they were going to show my clip from Nightmare on Elm Street, but they showed it to people at the office, and a secretary fainted. They had secretaries in those days, and it was deemed perhaps not ideal viewing if you don't want your audience falling to the floor.
We're talking again with Dick Cavett, who deserves the name that has been given to him of being a legend. Although I must tell you, when I interviewed many years ago, and I was with ABC, Dick Cavett was also with ABC and CBS and PBS, and I think he's a five-network guy. But I interviewed Kirk Douglas and introduced him as a legend. He got very angry at me, but I noticed in the Golden Globes he was repeatedly called a legend, and the reason he got angry at me was he said, "I'm still alive. The legends are usually dead." You don't mind being called a legend, I hope.
Well, it's the same psychology as life achievement. Obviously, when you get something, you get it for something that has happened. And if you think your life has happened, then you're eligible for a life achievement award. It's a way of saying you're dead.
Well, you're very much alive, as we can attest to.
Well, in some case, that would be advisable, but there it is.
You're still, in fact, a presence of the New York Times, we should mention.
Yes, I took a long time off from writing my Times column and finally did get it. A new one in that was so many people who read it said, not only thank you for making me laugh so hard, but you'll never know how I needed a laugh these days. And person after person added that or did some version of that. Yeah.
Well, you did, as you said earlier, have the privilege of interviewing some of the great comedians, most memorably, I suppose, people like Groucho Marx and Bob Hope. But your interviews just have such a span to them. I actually viewed the interview you did with Katharine Hepburn, and there she was complaining about the carpet and the table and all kinds of things before yeah. You even got started.
Actually, that bit is, the show is online, too, but that bit was my idea, and it's the only idea I think I've ever had. I'm just not an idea man, but I said, we don't know yet if she's going to really do the show. She's going to come in and check it out. Nobody had ever asked to do that before. See where she'll be sitting, what it'll look like. And she did. And she went bananas in a way about the carpet and the, what is this doing here and what is that. One of my favorite moments that Hepburn rearranges the carpet is, I think, it rearranges the furniture is on YouTube. But there was a moment that might have not been recorded where she said, what is this wall here? Can't we just take that out? And it was sort of this low wicker wall of some sort. And the guy said, well, that'd be kind of hard. We'd have to unscrew the don't tell me what's wrong. Just fix it.
Well, I also saw there's a lot of you on YouTube now, which is to our great advantage.
Yeah.
I saw the interview you did most memorably, because I'm a lit guy, with John Cheever and John Updike.
That was delightful for me to sit there with those two great guys. I had done them both separately. Individually, but there were thrills in having them together. The moment where John Cheever delivers this wonderful, beautifully phrased verbal valentine to John Updike's writing, and luckily the camera cut to Updike just loving it.
Well, there were some fascinating pairings in your career. I was just reflecting on that. I mean, some not quite as amicable as Cheever and Updike. There was Jim Brown and Lester Maddox. Some of our listeners may remember. There was Lillian Hellman and Mary McCarthy. And maybe most notably, there was Gore Vidal and Norman Mailer.
That was, in a way, a highlight, a peak, a Mount Everest of a show. And it came about partly because Norman had taken umbrage at something that Gore had written about him in the New York Review of Books and claimed that Gore had made him seem like Charles Manson. And Gore said, well, I must say you asked for it, Norman. And everybody stiffened and it went on from there. For those who missed it, I guess what really signaled where it was likely to go was when I asked Norman something and he said, why don't you just, he sort of ducked it and he said, why don't you just read the next question off your question sheet? Now, to me, sitting there wall-eyed with a question sheet on a clipboard is David Frost. So I resented that comparison, Frosty, and said, well, why don't you fold it five ways and put it where the moon don't shine. This is frequently misquoted back to me about once a month ever since that time years ago. And, and then Mailer says, Kevin, huge, one of the biggest laughs I ever got. I don't even know where that phrase came from. Tribal memory of Nebraska of some sort. Kevin, is that something you've had canned for years? Is that the truth? Is that something you've had waiting to use and spring it in? And I heard myself say, I should tell you a quote from Tolstoy. Well, this got another punishing laugh against Norman, and it almost came to blows.
Well, at that time, I think he was still in training to be a pugilist. It might not have gone to your advantage, but those...
Well, he walked on with his pugilist walk, you know, with his hands up at chest level and striding manly way, and I knew something was up.
We have, by the way, lots of people who want to ask you questions, and we only have till the half-hour mark with you, but let me ask you about something else in terms of, I suppose, one of the most memorable moments in your career in doing a talk show was when you walked off. It was Peter Falk and Ben Gazzara and John Cassavetes, and again, you kind of turned to them and said, are you guys smashed? I mean, you want to recall that?
Yeah, I remember. I just saw that thing again recently because it's listed, I think, on YouTube as Cavett's worst show ever. These three louts, all very fine actors, by the way, came on what a roommate of mine always pronounced Shafast. And each had at least a pint on the way in. So they did humorous satire, like taking the shoes off and smelling each other's feet, and, you know, really Noel Coward type stuff. And I finally just had it. I said, one thing I remember saying was, this is why I never joined a fraternity. And then I thought, in these three chairs, 1 week ago tonight, these three goons are sitting where Alfred Lunt, Lynn Fontanne, and Noel Coward were. And they didn't catch the significance of that. The sad part about that evening was, you know, I had liked all those guys, but...
Well, you call them goons and louts.
They were like three kids taking a beating from their parents. You know, it was sort of sad.
We're talking...
Good movie.
Talking with television personality, comedian, former talk show host, and author Dick Cavett, and he'll appear at SF Sketchfest at Marines Memorial Theater on Friday at 7:30 p.m. And let's get some questions from listeners here. Neil, you're first up. Morning.
Yeah, I'd like to know if you got any bad vibes from Johnny Carson for having a show opposite him. Carson was famous for being vindictive and for striking out at any rivals anybody who appeared opposite him.
Well, mainly Joan Rivers, but Dick Cavett, did you get any enmity from Dick? You were buddies for a long time, you and Carson.
Isn't that interesting that I didn't get anything like that? Quite the opposite. He wished me well. We were really, I really, really liked him, and I think he knew it, and it was kind of touching. And he would call me Richard. And one of my greatest moments was the night I made him break up and laugh so hard he went off the chair. It was the end of the show, his show. I was the last one to say goodbye to down the couch. And he said, Richard, what are you working on these days? And I had nothing. And the gods visited me, and I heard myself say, Johnny, I'm working on a sitcom. It's a humorous version of Gilligan's Island. The laugh went on until the fade out of it.
Let me thank Neil for that call and go to John next. John, join us. Hi.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead. You're on the air, John.
Yeah, hi. Dick, Mr. Cavett, I really appreciated your show. It was great. And I saw the video with Jimi Hendrix, and you were really great on that as well. My question is, what, you know, you mentioned his sense of humor, seemed like he really liked it when people laughed at his kind of joke. But what else stood out for you about that interview?
About Hendrix?
Yeah, I think you did him twice, didn't you?
Yeah, he came back. And I had never thought I would ever get him on once, but it was wonderful. And we liked each other and got on well. He was wearing a very flouncy silk shirt. When you were in the 101st Airborne as a parachutist, did you such and such something something? And I could see people's estimate of him. Look, people thinking that hippie, visibly change. It was a strange moment where I wasn't sure what I was going to say next to Jimmy, and I said, "Do you try to get up every morning and work each day?" And he said, "I try to get up every morning."
You know, as long as we're talking politics for the moment and right-wingers and the like, you did an interview, which was a very serious debate about the Vietnam War. And did you wind up on Nixon's enemies list as a result of that? John Kerry was involved, I remember. Yeah.
I'd be very sorry to learn that I did not. And I actually saw in print the other day that I did end up on the list.
You're on the tapes, I think, aren't you? He mentions you specifically
times,
on the tapes. Yeah.
I've been told 26 times. Yeah. If I need a little lift, I just turn to YouTube and see Nixon saying to his lickspittle, H.R. Haldeman, Cavett, there must be something we can do to screw him. And seeing, you know, the most powerful man in the world visualizing screwing you can make you feel funny for a moment, but I despised him, and I made that clear. But when I first met him, he was friendly. It was way before we had our troubles. A receiving line at the White House, Bob Hope and others, and I stood in front of Nixon first time. You couldn't take your eyes off his nose. I wrote about it. I said it's appalling width. It seemed to be as wider than the caricaturist drew it. But he was up on Bright Conversation. He said, "Who's doing your show tonight?" And I said, "Joe Namath." And he said, "How are his knees?" So
he loved to talk football. But you mentioned his nose. I thought you were going to mention his jowls, which used to get a lot of attention for their size. What do you think about our present member of the
dreadful?
Say again. No, I was just going to ask you what you think of the man who's in the White House now. You want to be as candid about that?
You don't have time to tell for me to tell you. I see it as a dreadful dream that we may awaken from someday. I see nothing to admire in any aspect of his looks, brains, or lack of them. I tweeted once, imagine Trump's library. You'd have to.
Yeah, I saw that. Let me get another caller on for you. And this is Alex, who's calling us from Georgetown in Washington, D.C. Hi, Alex.
Hi there. Thank you so much for taking my question. I was wondering, Mr. Cavett, if...
We didn't know it was your question.
Oh. Well,
okay,
I was wondering...
Go ahead.
I was wondering if there are any sort of contemporary late-night hosts today who you believe are doing the same sort of highly political or topical content that you used to do.
Oh, those guys are all so pathetic. Are we on the air?
Yes, we are.
Oh, they're all dear, dear friends of mine, and I admire... each one more than the others. Colbert and I have actually sat and laughed at each other over lunch, and I so admire his... he gets better all the time. I watch that thing that gives you a sort of summary of what they did the night before, because I've become someone who goes to bed early. The complaint I used to get, and everybody did when they hosted late night television, was, "You're on so late, I never get to see you." And they should work it out that they can do it or forget it.
Talking to the inimitable Dick Cavett, and by the way, he'll be appearing at SF Sketchfest at Marines Memorial this Friday at 7:30 p.m. I'm sorry, go ahead.
How'd you like the host of the...
Seth Meyers?
The
Golden Globes?
Yeah.
Yeah? Did you like him?
I think he's superb. Yeah.
He's funny, like you. And I haven't watched him that much behind the microphone on the TV part of it, but I thought he did a credible job. The nice thing about it was he just came out with an opening monologue, and then from there it was just introducing people. I was going to ask
you... Well, he was in one sense an impossible situation because everybody wanted nothing but women strides forward and women having the nerve to turn in the bastards who abuse them and so on. And he bridged the gap, dealt with it directly, sharp jokes, well-delivered, likable guy. Yeah.
Yeah, I wondered what your thoughts were about all that Me Too the Me Too movement that's going on, especially since Charlie Rose kind of replaced you to some degree in terms of being a public television interviewer in the nighttime. And, you know, he's one of the people who's been implicated in this.
I'm sorry about Charlie Rose and that. We've always had a good rapport, excuse me, and... I guess you do have to say, if you have any brains at all, that when we have a groper in the White House who shouldn't be getting away with it, you do have to deal with the people who also shouldn't be getting away with it and get punished for it. Really punished. Who would have predicted this, you know?
Tricky question for you. Are you still maintaining your close friendship with Woody Allen?
Very much so, yeah, yeah. I think it's funny. I resent it when people say, you know, the Cosbys, the Woody Allens. Let's remember something. All these other people had numerous complainants, numerous alleged cases. Allen had one. And it was born of a vengeful woman. And one. And that, the accusations of child molesting are ludicrous because, as everybody with freshman psychology knows, people with that affliction do not do it once. And they do it over and over and over until they are caught and then try it again when released. So... Allen's had a really undeserved bum rap for a long time from unrespectable people.
Well, Greta Gerwig just came out with a statement, I don't know if you saw it, just won a Golden Globe, in fact, and said that she was sorry she even worked with him because of Dylan Farrow. I mean, that's a whole can of worms here as we come up to the end of this program. But
Who said this?
Greta Gerwig, who just won a Golden Globe.
Yeah. Well, anybody can be full of it.
Well, so good to have you with us. Thank you, Dick Cavett. And again, congratulations on the award you're being given. Much deserved. He'll be at the SF Sketchfest at Marin's Memorial Theater on Friday at 7:30 p.m. Really good to have you. Thank you.
Did I thank you, Michael?
You can.
You make it easy.
Thank you.
You make it easy.
Appreciate that. We'll be back, and we're going to talk about DACA when we return. Stay tuned.